Davis Young is our next speaker. Davis is going to talk about 75 years of geology. He was a professor of geology at Calvin College and is currently retired but still active working from home. I got acquainted with Davis on a field trip at the ASA meeting at George Fox College some 5 or 6 years ago. So there's another stream of history, how people get to know each other and stay connected through ASA.
Terry or somebody, can you
you hit the slideshow button.
Yeah, well, I don't see it.
It's the bottom right, there's one.
We can do this together. This is a Macintosh computer. Oh, no, it's not.
That's why I'm asking.
Oh,
that's a slideshow.
Slideshow? From the beginning. Set up slideshow. Where is the beginning? From the beginning.
There we go. Thank you.
Since it's the 75th anniversary of ASA, I thought it would be appropriate to say some things about what's happened in the field of geology in the last 75 years. Quite a bit has happened in the last 75 years, and I would need at least 35 minutes to do that. So what I decided is to focus on we're missing a slide all of a sudden. I decided to focus on three aspects or three major developments over the last 75 years. One of those is plate tectonics. Another is planetary geology, and a third is the field of vertebrate paleontology. I want to turn, first of all, to plate tectonics. Now, I don't know why there's a slide missing here.
Did you write it on a Mac?
Yes.
And that's a translation problem. Obviously, when loaded on this PC, it didn't like everything it saw.
I was assured there would be Macs.
I've got a Macintosh computer, so once I load it up.
Well, I'm just going to have to wing it then and see what happens. We'll get to earthquake distribution in just a moment. In 1941, the year in which the Japanese decided to bomb Pearl Harbor, geologists were thinking about the stability of the continents and the ocean basins. The general consensus was that the continents and the ocean basins were stable, they weren't moving around, and the thought was that the ocean basins were just as old as the continents were as well. But then in the 1950s, people began to study the magnetic properties of rocks. They studied the magnetism within rocks, particularly lava flows. They would measure the magnetism in the mineral magnetite primarily. And when a lava flow cools, the magnetism, the magnetic domains within magnetite will align themselves in accord with the existing Earth's magnetic field. So you can use that magnetic information in a rock to tell where the Earth's magnetic north magnetic pole is. And what was done was to measure the magnetism in rocks from a wide range of ages, all the way from, say, 100 million to 500 million years. And lo and behold, it appeared that the position of the Earth's north magnetic pole had shifted position over time. This is one of the missing slides. So that suggested that the Earth's north magnetic pole had been migrating over time. The curious thing is that geologists from Europe and Asia could do the same thing with their rocks. They were also showing that the Earth's north magnetic pole had migrated, but the two tracks didn't agree. There was a wide separation in those two tracks. But, and that suggested that, hey, maybe the continents have moved too. It turns out that when you take North America and imagine moving it back into position next to Europe and Asia, that those two tracks of the magnetic poles align as one. It seemed like a confirmation that there had been continental drift. Another line of argument comes from the earthquakes up here. That's a map of distribution of earthquakes around the world, and you'll be able to see that there are a couple of main areas where earthquakes occur. One of these are the Mid-Atlantic Ridge and East Pacific Rise, which I was just looking at. Mid-Atlantic Ridge and the Indian Ocean Ridge, and so these oceanic ridge systems, mountain systems. Earthquakes occur along those regularly. They're relatively weak earthquakes. They are relatively shallow. They go maybe 10 kilometers below the surface of the Earth for the most part. They are also connected with movements that are extensional in character, suggesting that there's a rifting going on at those particular sites. Then if we go to the other main earthquakes around the rim of the Pacific Ocean and also over the vicinity of the Himalayas, etc., those are very different in character. Those earthquakes can descend, the foci of the earthquakes can go down as much as 700 kilometers below the surface. The earthquakes are more abundant, they're stronger as well. And in that case, in almost every case, the motion suggests that there's a compressional kind of activity going on, and in particular that there's a sliding downward, suggesting that the ocean floor crust has been sliding down deeper toward the mantle, and any crust next to it, particularly if it's continental crust, would be tending to ride up over that. So it looks like the crust is moving away from the ocean ridges and moving toward the area of heavy concentration of the earthquakes, which are typically associated with what we call subduction zones now. Now, if that's the case, then maybe you've got brand new seafloor material forming at the ocean ridges and then gradually drifting across to where a subduction zone is and then gradually disappearing. Hope for the best here. That's the original slide. There's the polar monitor. Okay, good. Works. Another thing that took place during the 1960s and 70s was that deep sea drilling was going on, and samples of seafloor could be brought up in cores, rocks could be dredged from the seafloor, and it was possible to date them by radiometric dating. So several specimens of seafloor basalt were dated, and it turned out that there was a pattern of ages on the seafloor as recorded by these basaltic lava flows, and also the sediments as well. It turned out that as we move away from the mid-oceanic ridge system, say from there, and move westerly or northwesterly towards Asia, the ages increased, and they went up to in the vicinity of a couple of 100 million years in age. That was a mind blower for geologists because they thought that the ocean basins were as old as the continents, which were known to be a few billion years old. The same is true for the Atlantic. Over here, here's the ridge system. If you move toward Africa, the rocks get older. The blue are the really old stuff, and the reddish is the young stuff. And this is true for all the ocean basins. They appear to be getting older and older the farther away you get from an ocean ridge system. It seems to suggest that the ocean floor crust has actually been moving from the ridge systems to the so-called subduction zones. What's causing this? Well, presumably the general thinking is that There are convection cells within the mantle. There's discussion about how big those convection cells are, but the ocean floor crust and the continental land masses are riding sort of piggyback on these convection cells. And we have a cross-section of the Earth, highly idealized, with a ridge system there, and brand new crust being formed there with the eruption of volcanic lavas forming the seafloor, and the crust slides across along with the upper part of the upper mantle, and then disappears downward at oceanic trenches at the places we call subduction zones. And here we have a map of the various plates as we think they exist today. It doesn't show the directions of movement, but at least the shapes of them. One point I wanted to make up before I go get any further is that by knowing the ages of the rocks on the seafloor and the size of the distance between the oceanic ridges and the places where the ocean floor disappears, you can calculate what the rate of spreading of the ocean floor crust is. And it amounts in every case to be just a few centimeters per year. In some cases very small, in other cases relatively large. The Atlantic crust seems to be moving slower compared to the Pacific. Now all of this was figured out long before anybody ever tried to measure present day movement of the ocean floor. We didn't have global positioning satellites back in the 1960s. And so this was all reconstructed from geological evidence. But now, in recent years, we've had global positioning satellites. And they have been monitoring what's going on here on the Earth. And they've been monitoring several different sites to see if they have, in fact, been moving. And lo and behold, they have been moving. The Pacific Ocean floor crust, it appears, has gradually been moving right now in a northwesterly direction a few centimeters a year. The Atlantic Ocean is moving to the east and to the west on either side of the Mid-Atlantic Ridge at a rate of 2 or 3 centimeters per year. And what we have then is this remarkable confirmation, I think, of plate tectonics. The rates of spreading are consistent, more or less, with what we have figured out just from the geology, and the directions of movement are also consistent with that. Now, it's a little bit hard to see from the map up here what the directions of movement are, but I'll give you a little hint from this. This is data from Townville in Australia showing what's happening to that town on the northeast coast of Australia. The upper curve shows the movement of Townville, Australia, relative to a seafloor trench somewhere. The upper curve there tells you that the Townville area is moving in a northerly direction. This is telling you the latitude. The lower curve tells you it's moving in a easterly direction, so that's the longitude. There are numbers up there showing right about there. That's going 56 millimeters per year latitude north, and 28 centimeters easterly. Millimeters. Those are two vectors there, and you've got to combine them to get the overall motion. So it amounts to just a few centimeters in a northeasterly direction. Another example is Bermuda, which is in the Atlantic Ocean, and the evidence there suggests that Bermuda, being sitting on the Atlantic Ocean crust, is moving in a northwesterly direction. So again, up at the top we have that northerly motion latitude-wise, and in the lower, or the middle curve, you have the westerly motion. And in this case, the actual motion is considerably smaller than what we've got in the case of the Australian plate, as we call it. The lower curves measure the vertical change over time, and it's not very much. And all of this has been taking place since about the mid-90s, mid to late 90s. So we've got about 15 to 20 years worth of data. So again, this to me is a remarkable confirmation of the validity of geological reasoning, constructing this whole theory of plate tectonics. And then we come around to actually measuring it now, and it's what we would have expected from the geology. The next thing I want to talk about is planetary geology. And most of us are, if you're like me, you're not aware of just how many things have been shot out into space to find out what's out there. It's a lot different from what it was in 1941. In 1941, while Joe DiMaggio was hitting 56 in 56 straight games, the astronomers were having a hard time with planets. They were just fuzzy little lights in their telescopes. And, well, they had the moon, at least, to see that clearly. But so little was known about the planets, other than their orbits, perhaps. And with regard to the moon, thinking was that a lot of those craters up there were volcanic. Now we think of them almost entirely as impact craters. So, here's a little summary of planetary flybys. There's all kinds of probes out there just sailing right on past virtually all of the planets. I haven't included everything here. And we've got a remarkably good success rate with those. One reason for that is once you shoot it out into space, it'll keep on going, and you don't have to care whether it crash lands or not, if your goal is just to fly by. So that's one way of getting information. We've got planetary orbiters, a lot of those, and around several of our planets, some of them still operative. We've got planetary soft landers, including the moon, where we've even put human beings up there, as well as some rovers. Successes and failures is about even in this case. And we should mention again that you heard this morning, there are four different rovers on Mars. Here's the moon. I think you recognize that. What I want to make, a point I want to make about the moon is that it's a more complicated place than it might look at first glance. There is evidence of a history there. The sort of whitish areas are mountainous and rugged, composed of a rock called anorthosite. And the measurements of age on those from actual samples that have been brought back to Earth and determined by radiometric dating are in the 4 billion year range. And the darker areas where most of the landing was done because it's a little flatter, a little safer, those are flat plains of basaltic lava. They fill in, at least many of them do, fill in craters. So there were some craters that bashed into the highlands area, and then they got filled in with basaltic lava. And those tend to be in the 3 billion year range. And then there's a whole lot of other cratering going on after the lava flows. The highlands continue to be blasted by, not zapped, but blasted by large projectiles. Now, one of the stunning things for me when the moon missions were going on was to see how tiny the craters got. You may remember, those of us who were a little older, when you had some of those probes going right to the moon, just to crash land, you could see, you get closer and closer for craters and craters and craters. They get smaller and smaller and smaller. And when the astronauts got on the surface of the moon, they found little glass beads with teeny little craters in the beads. Here's a thin section looked at through polarizing light microscope of the basaltic lava flow from the moon. Very typical, brilliant colors in many of the rocks up there. There's a total lack of weathering in those moon rocks. Take it to Mars right now. This is the Gale crater that Roger talked about this morning. The Gale crater is a fascinating site. It's a geologically really complex area. And nobody's been up there to walk around and sample it. So it's undoubtedly a lot more complicated than Curiosity can tell us. Someday, hopefully, we'll get somebody up there. We've got all kinds of geologic features of interest on Mars. There's a lot of sedimentary rock layering. There's cross-bedding in the layering, where you've got horizontal layers and other subsidiary layers at an angle to it, typical of dunes or river deposits or beach deposits. And so that implies that there's dunes or beaches or something up there, or have been on Mars. There's the rover down there, Curiosity. Here's one of the dune fields. Roger showed one of those this morning. Pluto. We've even had a probe out to Pluto, circling around it and taking images. What a fascinating looking place. I never would have dreamed of it. So you've got rugged areas out here, and then there's this gigantic flat surfaced area, Sputnik Planum, Sputnik Plain. And that's just a big frozen lake, so to speak, of carbon monoxide ice, I think methane ice, and other kinds of ices. Some of the highland areas are water ice. So this is a complicated place. And when you get close up, you see that this is the edge of Sputnik Planum, or it butts up against the higher elevation. And when you look at that, you see it's all fractured into these big cells. And it's hard to tell from where you are, I think, but there's on the surface, you push the wrong button here. Surface, there's this very fine rippling on the field of ice. So even Pluto is complicated, and if we could get up there someday, we'll probably find out it's really complicated. I've even seen glaciers, which doesn't come as a great surprise, given that there's so much ice up there. Meteorites. Now I want to talk a little bit about the dating of planetary objects, or objects from the solar system. So we've been looking at meteorites for years, and many of them have been dated, dozens of meteorites have been dated. Now, this is just a smattering of those. The Allende meteorite comes in at 4.5 billion years. For those of you who don't know what GA is, that's billion years. And all of these meteorites from outer space, other than the ones that come from Mars, have ages very close to 4.5 billion years. And it doesn't matter what kind of method was used to determine those ages, you come up with basically the same age, 4.5 billion. Ancient terrestrial rocks. We got some pretty old ones, and every once in a while somebody finds one that's just a tad older than what we had before. We've now gotten into the 4 billion year, very low 4 billion year range, and a few very remote places. For the most part, the really old ones are sort of 3 billion years old. Why does the Earth not have 4.5 billion year of age rocks? Because it's such an active planet, with tectonic plates churning stuff over, erosion's going on, metamorphism of rocks, so we don't really expect ever to find 4.5 billion year rock on Earth. Then as to the moon, the rocks on the moon in the Mare regions tend to be in the 3 billion year range. They're not all the same, which is suggested that there were various episodes of magma flooding. The lunar highland rocks are well into the 4 billion year range. So we've got this fairly consistent pattern of ages from various parts of the solar system coming in at about 4.5 billion years. And some of the model ages that are devised for the Earth come out with the same age. Okay. Before I pass on, the thing I wanted to mention with regard to that is that the dating, the information we have about age is just consistent with the whole of solar system. And I have a very friendly fly up here. And it's hard to account for what you see up on Mars, let's say, by Noah's flood. All right, with regard to the paleontology. In 1941, which happens to be the year I was born in, we didn't know much about whales. We didn't know what the lineage of whales was. And not only that, but there were other kinds of fossils that we have found, which were not in existence, which we didn't know about 75 years ago. The first one I want to talk about are the whales. And you all know that whales don't have any very well-developed hind legs. You may not have known that they have hind legs at all. They have very teeny, short bones where the legs normally would have been. What it turns out, and the front legs, have turned into flippers. What we see here is a range of whale forelimbs gradually taking on the shape of flippers as we approach modern whales. The whales on the whale leg on the left there goes back about 40 million years old. There are some even older than that, going back about 50 million years. And we see a series of whales, and about several hundred whale skeletons have been found just in the last several years. The forelimbs gradually take on this more flipper-like appearance. Here's a series of skulls of whales ranging from about 30 million to present day on the right, starting on the left and going to the right. And notice where the opening for the nostrils would be, somewhere on the front of the head, the skull. And as you look at more recent whales, the nostrils gradually move farther and farther up the skull until you get to modern day ones where you have the blowhole on the top. This is fossils Tiktaalik, which was discovered on Ellesmere Island about a decade ago. It's a transitional form between between fish and amphibian. To my knowledge, we hadn't had such a transitional fossil before. This one does. The head and the skull are clearly amphibian. It had a movable neck, and the back part is a fish-like thing. You can see scales, and there are fins as well. There are other samples, specimens of the Tiktaalik, and some of them are better than what you see here. These are about 375 million years old, but date back to the Devonian period. And lastly, one of the wonderful discoveries in the last 25 years are feathered dinosaurs. Who would have dreamed? Only the paleontologists. There are apparently now in northeast China about 45 species known of fossil feathered dinosaurs. And that suggests then that there was a feathered dinosaur parent ancestor back in the Jurassic period, which is the time when the Archaeopteryx, the first bird, developed. These are all lower Cretaceous in age. So the upshot of this is that we've had these remarkable confirmations that are consistent with the idea of evolutionary development of life forms on Earth. Thank you.
The reason we heard your schedule is because so that people can move back and forth between parallel sessions, but we have time for
in light of this progression. The discovery of soft tissue in dinosaur bones.
Yeah, I heard her talk several years ago, and I found it fascinating, and I haven't followed her work since then. I'm not a paleontologist, but I think that's very exciting.
Do you have anybody that asks you questions about that in your talks?
No, I have not.
One more?
Reasons to Believe has a little booklet about Mary Schweitzer's work, so that would be a place to go. If anybody wants a really quick look of the plate tectonics, we have it in chapter 11 of the book in Grand Canyon. I'll be glad to talk about it at the desk if you like. If anybody wants it, I have a paper that I can email to you on radiometric dating, talking about those ages.
And you are?
I'm Ken Wagenbusch. I'm at the Grand Canyon book table.
Got it. Okay, one more if it's quick.
I noticed that it looks like they're spreading sooner along the west coast of the U.S. Does that account for the volcanoes inland from the coast in places like Washington State?
Yeah, there's the, I think it's the one. I think it's the Juan de Fuca ridge off the coast of Northern California, Oregon, and Washington. And the part east of that ridge is seafloor that is migrating toward the Cascade Range, toward the coast of those states. And it, underneath the continental crust, it's gradually sliding underneath there. And when the basaltic crust slides down far enough and sediments get dragged down with it, it eventually melts. And that works its way up toward the surface as magma, hence the Cascade Range volcanoes.
So there's a subduction zone almost coincident with the spreading zone.
It's very close, yeah. And what may happen, in fact, if we can wait around long enough, North America as a whole is moving in a westerly direction. So it's moving toward that ridge. And it's already overridden a subduction zone and moving toward that ridge. So if we wait around for a few more million years, we'll do away with that ridge.
All right, let's wait. Thank you very much.